In the basement of Copenhagen Police Headquarters sits a broken man. Detective Carl Merck was once sharp, respected, and effective. Now, after a shooting that left his colleague dead and another paralyzed, he's a shell, chronically late, impossible to work with, and haunted by shadows he can barely acknowledge. The physical scar where a bullet grazed his temple is nothing compared to the psychological wounds festering beneath. When his superiors create Department Q to investigate cold cases deserving special scrutiny, it's not a promotion, but exile. The political initiative comes with 5 million kroner, though his bosses plan to divert most funds elsewhere. Carl is effectively being put out to pasture, expected to idle away his days with forgotten files. Yet something unexpected happens when he encounters the 5-year-old disappearance of Mireta Lingard. As he examines the brilliant politician's case, inconsistencies in the original investigation irritate him. The detective who could see connections others missed gradually reawakens, not with enthusiasm, but with annoyance at the sloppy work of others. His resurrection accelerates with the arrival of his mysterious assistant, Assad, whose enthusiasm and unconventional methods both irritate and intrigue Carl. Together, they form an unlikely partnership that will challenge Carl's cynicism and potentially offer redemption for the guilt he carries. Mireta Lingard was the complete package. Beautiful, brilliant, and a rising political star at 32. Tabloids adored her parliamentary prowess and enigmatic personal life, unaware she cared for her brother Uffe, who hadn't spoken since the car accident that killed their parents when she was 16. Her evenings revolved around sweet, silent Uffe, playful chases, his favorite videos, and holding her hand until he fell asleep. This responsibility explained her strict 6 p.m. departures. Then everything shattered. In February 2002, Mireta noticed someone watching her, a man in a white trench coat photographing a museum. Days later came a cryptic envelope. "Have a nice trip to Berlin." During a ferry trip with Uffe, she vanished. Police concluded she accidentally fell overboard while stopping Uffe from retrieving his cap. The horrifying truth? Mireta was imprisoned in a pressure chamber, with captors methodically increasing the air pressure each birthday, subjecting her to calculated torture for some unknown purpose. What drives such cruelty? And, after 5 years, could she possibly survive? Assad enters the narrative like a breath of fresh air, albeit one scented with exotic spices and mint tea. Within hours of arriving as Carl's assistant, he transforms the neglected basement office, alphabetizing books, numbering binders, and brewing powerful coffee. His background remains mysterious. He claims Syrian origins, with inconsistencies Carl later notices, mentions torture as a political refugee, but deflects personal questions. What makes Assad compelling is how his outsider status becomes his strength. While Carl and colleagues are bound by institutional thinking, Assad approaches problems unconventionally. When forensic technicians refuse to remove a crossed-out line in Mireta's phone book, Assad offers a contact who can handle it. Assad's most valuable contribution is his fresh perspective. He notices Mireta's special glow in videos suggesting she had fallen in love, a human insight overlooked by procedural investigators. Later, he spots faint light from covered monitors that proves vital to locating Mireta. Their partnership evolves from skepticism to respect. Carl is irritated by his cheerfulness and misused Danish idioms, yet comes to rely on his observations. Two damaged men finding strength in their differences. As Carl and Assad investigate, they uncover a complex deception around Mireta's disappearance. Someone impersonated Daniel Hale for her Christiansborg meeting, while billionaire Bill Anforskov denied knowing Hale despite their business ties. The case deepens when Carl learns Hale died in a car accident after Mireta vanished. Detective Bach notes skid marks showed Hale swerved before hitting Dennis Knudsen's vehicle. Knudsen later died from alcohol poisoning. A breakthrough comes when Assad finds Mareta's overlooked briefcase containing her calendar, phone, and notes. They discover Hale's crossed-out name and number in her phone book, actually belonging to a girl whose phone was stolen from a middle school in 2002. Carl connects Atomos, Knudsen's childhood friend from Godham Children's Home, with Lars Henrik Jensen, the Hale impersonator. When checking Jensen's identification number, Carl finds it doesn't exist, suggesting tampered official records. What drives someone to keep another human being alive for 5 years in a pressure chamber, gradually increasing atmospheric pressure to maximize suffering? This calculated retribution reveals the depths of human capacity for cruelty. The perpetrator's motives stem from rejection. The Lingard Foundation denied Lassie Jensen's mother's application for 100,000 kroner for early hospital discharge because it served only descendants of Lotte and Alexander Lingard. This simple rejection festered into hatred. The psychological complexity deepens with the car accident that killed Moret and Uffe's parents. That collision also devastated another family. A pregnant mother gave birth to twins amid the wreckage, with one baby dying. This shared trauma later twisted into something sinister. Loss's vengeance manifests as elaborate psychological torture. The pressure chamber becomes both literal and metaphorical, physical confinement and a psychological pressure cooker designed to break Moret before she understands her punishment. Most disturbing is how victims transform into perpetrators, with the Jensen family seeing themselves as righteous avengers rather than criminals. Identity, its construction, preservation, and potential dissolution forms a central theme throughout the novel. Carl struggles with his changed identity after the shooting, resisting his new role in Department Q. Marita maintains dual identities, promising politician publicly and devoted caretaker privately. Her captivity represents an assault on identity, as she's stripped of everything defining her. Her determination to think thoughts that keep madness away reflects her desperate attempt to preserve her sense of self despite extreme deprivation. Uffe exists in a liminal state, his identity frozen at trauma. Assad's mysterious background raises questions about constructed identities. The most disturbing exploration comes through Lars Henrik Jensen impersonating Daniel Hale, identity theft, serving a revenge plot. The pressure chamber becomes a metaphor for identity under duress. Marita's final act, carving her testimony into concrete, represents her determination to ensure her identity survives, even if she doesn't. In the end, connections between damaged people offer healing possibilities. Carl's partnership with Assad evolves from forced arrangement to productive relationship built on complementary skills and growing respect. Despite remaining irritated by Assad's habits and mysterious background, Carl values his insights. The most powerful redemptive moment comes when Mareta awakens and Uffe speaks for the first time in over 20 years, saying Mareta to his sister, suggesting love can survive extreme trauma. For Carl, witnessing this reunion provides vicarious redemption. The pressure in his chest, a physical manifestation of his guilt, finally fades. Though he couldn't save Anchor or restore Hardy's mobility, his persistence has created healing beyond the immediate victims. These connections don't suggest trauma can be easily overcome, but offer modest hope that human bonds provide meaning even after horrific events. When institutions fail and vengeance consumes, perhaps these fragile connections save us from our darkest impulses.